Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Your silence.
Please be seated. Before I call the first case of the morning, my notes tell me that we have students from Iola Scandinavia School. If that's the case, would you all please stand? Oh, very good. Well, thank you for joining us. You may be seated. Well, the students are here on a program that we run in coordination with the State Bar of Wisconsin called Court Class, so they know a little bit about the argument that they're going to hear this morning. Students and advisors, if you can stay after our second argument of the morning, Justice Rebecca Dallet, who sits down there at the end of the bench, will come down and chat with you a little bit about the Supreme Court, how cases get here, and answer some of your questions. She won't be discussing the merits of the case that we're about to hear, but I'm sure she'll have a lot of things that will be worth your staying to hear if you have that time. Now I will call the first case of the morning, Office of Lawyer Regulation versus Hamas. And before we begin, you'll notice that the chair next to me is empty. Justice Shirley Abrahamson generally sits there. She will not be participating in this case by phone or by any other way and will be not be involved in the decision-making of the issues that you present to us in your argument. So are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Please do.
Good morning, Justices. I appeared last before you in 2014-2015. At the time of my appearance, I said I would be back. At the time of my appearance, I already had pending matters that were being investigated by the Office of Lawyer Regulation. I was upfront in terms that I, unfortunately, not that you're probably pleasant folks, be back in front of you to explain my conduct and to assess whatever disposition the Office of Lawyer Regulation sought. At the time of my appearance in 2014, the decision was in 2015, I had already discontinued my general legal practice for over 2.5 years. So in terms of the general public, in terms of individuals that would seek and provide me compensation, I had already discontinued the practice due to the fact that it was apparent that the administrative as well as either flaws, as you would call them, or limitations, that I had yet to develop the type of categorical consistency, I think is the word that I would use and I wrote down in my opening statement, to assure that I wouldn't be back here every year addressing a limitation that I had achieved on behalf of a client. So when I appeared back here in 2014, I already knew these charges. I already knew the list. And as I expressed back then, I had already discontinued my legal practice for over 2.5 years. I also explained that while I transitioned into different types of employment, I did help family and friends. I did continue with a long-time relationship that I had with a company that dated back to my law school days as a law clerk in 1984. But outside of that, I maintained exactly what I told your honors 5 years ago. Not a year ago, not 2 years ago, 5 years ago. So the emphasis that I would make in my opening statement, and then I will open it up to questions because unfortunately I know that the majority of this is a question-answer format, is that as you've examined the briefs and the material, you can see that the counts that are identified from Leach and Davis and Kowalski, Benson, my trust account issues, Erickson, Weinrich, Groff, Diane M., and Teagan and Anderson are, in some instances, over a decade old. For example, Leach. The majority...
Counsel, I'm not entirely sure what you're suggesting. Are you suggesting that because these are old and you knew of their pendency the last time you were here, that we should take no action on them?
Absolutely not. As you can see in my brief, I've indicated I'm going to be suspended. The issue here is revocation. And the issue that I'm presenting to you, Your Honor, is mitigation of factors. As stated, which I obviously disagreed with much of the referee's report, she states on page 25 of her report, Hamas has not learned to change or modify his behavior or seek assistance so he can maintain a law practice that complies with Chapter 20. I'm unsure as to how significant of a change or modification of a behavior an attorney can take by discontinuing the practice, the advertisement, the general practice of law, so that I am not in a situation such as what I dealt with on a private client basis, as well as any trust accounting issues, where I discontinued my trust account, all of those factors. So as you can see from the brief, Your Honor, the distance that we have here, I understand I'm going to be suspended. I project that there is a case decision, Chavez, that's consistent with my suspension projection should be, even with my past disciplinary history.
So what are the mitigating factors? You're saying the fact that you shut down your practice and closed your trust account. What else?
The other mitigating factors that I identify in the brief that are identified on page 29 projects, for example, Your Honor, the trust fund violations. I took no one's money. I misappropriated no one's money. The violations that existed were the inconsistency of not identifying depository receipts on the face front of the deposit, an existence of a certified check that was drawn from the trust account and paid to a bank on behalf of a client, not any connection to me, and the fact, bluntly, that I was unaware that you are not allowed between your law office account and your trust account to exchange money electronically. And I did that repeatedly. I moved my money from a trust account under my trust account ledger into the general account, but I did so not in a hand form format. I did electronically. The other, Your Honor, mitigating factors that are identified further on page 30 is that the cooperation with the Office of Lawyer Regulation consists of four of the counts, Kowalski Diane M. And Weinrich are all identified which was Tegan. They're identified as though I didn't cooperate with the Office of Lawyer Regulation. I did not, Your Honor, 100%, and this is why I'm being suspended. I did not timely cooperate. But I cooperated in every single one of these files. I defaulted on nothing. On some of the files, for example, Kowalski, which I was not found in any violation of anything, the file was nearly 1,500 pages long over a two-year child custody battle. I understand, Your Honor. I was threatened to be suspended for not cooperating. But I did cooperate. And the other element of cooperation that I would project to here is that you will see that this is a stipulated disposition regarding the counts. I did not go through a referee hearing. We sat down, we identified which counts would be dismissed and which counts would be admitted to, and I moved forward, so I did not either protract the situation or extend any further resources unnecessary on items that, for example, Your Honor, I mentioned the Kowalski. I didn't timely respond. There's no expense that I wanted to extend relative to that.
Counselor, what is it that you want to do? You obviously have some type of a practice of law, and that you said you're working for a company with whom you've had a relationship since law school. Are you in-house counsel? What kind of work are you doing?
That's hard to define. It would be considered an in-house counsel position, but it's less than 3 to 5 hours a month, It is a phone call on a terms and conditions to an indemnification agreement. It's a collection matter that they would like something filed for. They're fully aware, as they've been connected to me, they've been through the prior suspensions. What I'm seeking, Your Honor, is, and this is the, as I've extracted myself from the legal practice, I recognize that I still have benefit. I am not going to agree with the picture painted of me as a human by referee Goldman, where she asserts in page 25, it is concerning to this referee that he believes assisting family and friends without compensation on a limited sporadic basis is better for those persons than having them hire competent counsel within the field of needed services who have no history of violations of Supreme Court rule. Referee Goldman extends the curve to the point where no human who has a disciplinary history with the state of Wisconsin should ever be hired by someone else.
Well, but, you know, the referee is the referee. You're now before the Supreme Court, and we will make our own determinations and our own decisions. And we read what the referee wrote. We read what OLR wrote. We read what you wrote. From that, we draw together what we think is appropriate and necessary given the facts and the circumstances. So I was trying to get my arms around what it is you want to continue to do. I get that you don't want to be revoked. I understand that. But are you wanting to continue to represent friends in a capacity as a lawyer? Is your request simply to continue with in-house position with a company that knows you well? What is it that you want to do in your future? What do you see your future as?
Your question is 100% accurate as to what I'm seeking to do. I recognize I'm going to be suspended. The company that I provide 3 to 5 hours a month for knows that. I would like to, at a time in the future, maintain that relationship. If the time in the future extends out to a revocation position, then I'll be into my 60s, and I believe that matters will project so far past that I'll never have that opportunity. Of course I would like to assist family and friends. I mean, is it going to be shameful in a year where it's 6 months if one of my children want me to help them assist in drafting a will or have a family friend? Like, for example, Your Honor, I'm currently representing an individual that has multiple felonies in Greene County. It's the only open pending case I have, but it was a family friend that works with my wife and is a suite mate with my wife. I would like that opportunity in the future. I have transitioned economically as well as mentally to the fact that I don't have, interest is the wrong word, I don't have the administrative capability, and I certainly have limitations that I've demonstrated in the past in not being properly directing to a client's needs. That's why I stipulated to these items and connect them to them.
But still the gentleman or woman, whoever it is that is facing felony charges, you still have to provide the same sort of responsiveness to that person, even if it's without charge, that you would to any client that sought your services, correct?
That's 100% correct, and I have done that. I've been in front of Judge Beer for a year and a half. We had a scheduled argued sentence, which I included a over 15-page brief in terms of that argued sentence. So I have the – this is not in any projection egotistical. I am not an incompetent lawyer. I am an intelligent, competent lawyer that while these matters are problematic and are in violation with my responsibilities, I truly admit that. I represented hundreds and hundreds of individuals during this time frame that received competent and capable legal service, and that is something that I believe a revocation will remove.
What kind of a suspension with conditions do you envision to permit you to do what you're asking us to let you do?
Well, I realize that I've already identified that I understand a one-year suspension. The limit.
That we're not talking. I want to know what it is you would like to be able to do and how you think that a suspension. I guess I'm trying to look at, you tell us there are things that you're not You've never really developed the skill to handle, like dealing with trust accounts seems to be an obvious example.
Right, so I don't have a trust account, Your Honor.
Okay. So what I'm trying to understand, I understand some of the I'm not gonna, but I don't understand what it is if you're suspended for a period of time and then you come back to practice. Often we give conditions to try to keep past problems from coming up again. Have you thought about conditions if you're allowed to resume practice at some point in time after a suspension?
The conditions that I projected would exist if sought in terms of this question is, one, I continue not to maintain a trust account, which I don't earn income connected to it, so I have no issues connecting to a trust account. I would, as would be projected, I would take whatever additional courses were sought by the court that they saw with additional whatever flaws that would exist regarding the items identified here. I would seek to represent an identified in-house position, but recognize that I would not be allowed to, that I would be only limited to that connection. And then I saw a case, I don't recall it, I didn't write it down, but any other individual that sought for me to represent them in terms of a family or friend would have to identify that in a form of, I guess the best word would be waiver, that they recognize that they're either a family or a friend that is seeking for me to do this without compensation. I don't seek to earn compensation from providing those practices of law.
Do you have a friend who is a lawyer that might be a mentor to you after a suspension period to assure that you don't step into legal situations that will get you into trouble again?
I did not address this to him. However, in my first matter before this court, I was represented by Lester Pines. I saw Mr. Pines approximately 3 months ago. He referenced to me, I said, I see you're back in front and how you're handling it. And I said, well, as you know, I told you, Lester, 7 years ago, I was discontinuing the practice of law. And all that Mr. Pines said, well, Jim, if there's anything that I can do to help, just let me know.
Now, he's a very, very good lawyer.
He was a very good lawyer to me. I'm just saying that I haven't approached that issue with him, but he is an individual that I held in high regard and only can express to you with the brief five-minute exchange he had with me. He seems to, I mean, he still recognized me, and I hadn't seen him in eight years.
He is a very good lawyer.
He still recognized me and wished me well luck, and he obviously was tracking something because he knew that I was coming before the court.
Okay. All right.
Counsel,
thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
You indicate that you are a competent lawyer. And I'm not focusing right now on your competence. One of the things that concerns me is not competence, but in counts, I think five of the 39 counts involved dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation, asserting lies. Can you address that? Because that's problematic to me. You know, you can be the most competent in terms of legal proficiency, but in terms of character and fitness, conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation is a different level. Now, just because it's a different level doesn't mean it's revocation, but it is more than just competency. So I wanted you to address the allegation, or pled no contest, to those counts, or some of those counts, because that's what's most concerning to me.
And those cause, I will answer them specifically in terms of those counts. Those cause concern to me, Your Honor, because these are the parts of us, and I don't think people have a stain of human flaw that exists and goes right down their back their entire life. But I believe that the primary reason, if we want to talk about fraud, dishonesty, deceit, and misrepresentation, On those five elements, I project, and I don't try to quibble on words, misrepresentation is a more direct. I see no contentions of fraud. I never took anybody's money. Deceit is what I was in front of the first time in 2011. I deceived, he was out of Jefferson County, the judge, when he asked me if I was suspended. I deceived him by saying, well, I'm taking care of it today, Your Honor. That was a deceit. In terms of the specific elements, Your Honor, that's, if you want to ask in terms of a character reflection, that's the character reflection that resulted in me stepping away in 2011 and 2012. Because what I didn't see as a misrepresentation was being identified as a misrepresentation. The clearest of example for that example is in the Leach matter. 2008, I represent Jacoby Leach in an appeal that's this big of a file. And I handle it to the best of my ability. I get every deadline. I meet every extension. I do everything that's asked of me out of that situation. But in the combing of this much of a file by the Office of Lawyer Regulation, they find two elements where I misrepresented. One is that I said I had sent a transcript a couple weeks earlier than I actually did, in one letter, in one paragraph, in one sentence. That was a misrepresentation. When I wrote that letter, and I have that there, I did not accurately identify the date of the mailing of that transcript. Did it have an impact on the case? Not one iota. But they found that in the file. Further on, in an email exchange or an exchange with one of Mr. Leach's victims of domestic abuse, a woman, I misrepresented that I was timely following up on his request for the release of the no contact order. I did. And they found that in this. And then they found another one in the progressive file. And they found another one in another file. And I recognized that what I felt was in my task of doing law in the, and again, I'm saying I misrepresented. I stipulated to those. But I bent it. And at the time, to be honest with Your Honor, I felt that I was just for that inconsequential element, I was a rule bender. But I was a rule breaker. And so when I recognized that what I saw was clearly different, notwithstanding the success with 100 clients or with the other files or whatever I felt as being an acceptably competent lawyer, I was not adequately representing that. Another example, and I don't recall all the specifics, if it was that count, was the Davis matter. I handled the Davis matter, I thought, quite well with a very distraught and difficult dealing situation for a woman out of Janesville. I attended the City of Janesville meetings. I represented her. I tried to negotiate a severance package. But in terms of my projections to her, I did not follow up with all of the items that I was following up on. And in doing that, I can see, while I felt I was correctly assessing to her the situation, that in her projection, I was misrepresenting my timeliness of doing the work and the specifics of doing the work. So if I'm falling within this own category, and I'm not saying I have a defect in my brain where I can't distinguish between the two, I recognize that I needed to step back in terms of that deconnectability. When you look at the larger set of pictures, and this is where I look at the revocation element to it, when you look at the revocation cases, including those referenced by the Office of Lawyer Regulation, these are not appearing in court, stealing people's money. I mean, the one that they mentioned, the Kelly, where he just took people's money and didn't do any work whatsoever. And that's where I recognize that in those five instances, what I projected as rule bending were not compliance with the rules. And that the best, yes, ma'am, yes, Your Honor.
Please finish your
statement. No, I think I'm in my third repeat.
There's 40 counts of misconduct that span from 2008 to 2012. So can you tell us anything about your life professionally from 2012 on, last 6 or 7 years, that would alleviate concerns about this type of misconduct being repeated? What has changed?
I discontinued my trust account. So I don't have, again, in terms of what you're seeking for that part of it. In terms of my personal life, I don't drink, I don't smoke. I've never had a drinking problem, but I don't have any elements of addiction or anything of that nature that would be connected to that. I have moved into a course of employment, which is in the construction field, that allows me to provide a substantive benefit to my employees and myself and the customers in a way where I personally feel more self-rewarded and more self-confident to myself. By the time that I reached 2012, Your Honor, I literally second-guessed everything that I was doing on almost every matter for every client and was wondering every single mistake that I was making. And in that capacity, especially as it exhilarated in 2011 when the first suspension came down. So I'm happily married. My kids are grown. And then the other elements to it is that I think that my life has calmed down from objectively the chaos of not chaos, but the, Your Honor, I literally had 20 matters going on between 2010 and 2012 under investigation, and just the entire elements of that creates difficulty of balance. So in terms of where I'm at with my life is that I have a focus energy on an income stream that's not related to the law. And in that regard, I don't have to make any forms of decisions that would be that bending of the truth that have an economic element to it that would relate to the practice of law. And I'd have no intention of going back into that. I went to Chief Justice's inquiry in terms of the limitations and expectations that I have, and those would be the limitations and expectations that I have. My stop button came on.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
May it please the Court. I am Jonathan Hendricks, Assistant Litigation Counsel with the Office of the Law of Regulation, and I'm going to raise the podium here and
yes,
adjust the microphone.
It should be on the right side, your right.
Oh, there we go.
There you go.
Is that better?
Yeah,
there we
better.
Go.
Thank you.
Attorney Hammes raises three arguments in his brief. He talked mostly today about sanction, but I just want to briefly address the first two issues that he raises. One, he does cite some facts in the referee's report, which he believes essentially make the report inaccurate. The standard for a referee's factual findings is clearly erroneous. He has not demonstrated in his brief that any of the facts that he cited were clearly erroneous. Most of them were either reasonable inferences from what was in the record, and the record, as he alluded to, is very limited in this case. It's essentially a stipulation between OLR and Mr. Hammes, and that was based mainly on OLR's amended complaint in this matter.
I think that the findings of fact that we accord deference to, unless they're clearly erroneous, are those findings that support the charges, but that's not what's before us. I mean, you all have agreed on what charges we are to consider today. We will decide if we think, in fact, the facts support those charges. But I think what he's talking about are not those kinds of facts. They're the referee's opinion of why she's recommending the discipline. But we always do discipline de novo.
Right, and I understand that. I just wanted to briefly address that, and I'll talk more about the sanction in just a minute. The second argument that he raises in his brief is that OLR used subpoenas during its investigative process to gather bank records against him. Just as a preliminary note, again, those bank records are not part of the record in this case because this case was decided on a stipulation. OLR used the information from Attorney Hammes' bank records to generate the facts that appear in the amended complaint and therefore in the record. OLR does have the authority given to it by this court under SCR 2203 sub 8 and SCR 2242 to issue subpoenas during the investigative phase. And that's a pretty common practice that the
agency
Okay,
but that's not what he's grumbling about today.
I know.
We're beyond that. Let's talk about the discipline. That's why we're
the discipline. In her decision, the referee noted that there's a lack of trust with Attorney Hammes. And I think that's sort of the core of her, essentially her argument, her reasoning in there. One of the reasons that this...
Is it correct to say that every time he's been in front of a referee, the referee has questioned his credibility? Am I correct in that or not?
I do not know. I have not read the transcripts of his previous hearings. In this matter, he was never under oath. She did, of course, see him personally during what essentially was a plea hearing where we talked about the the stipulation between the parties. But I think, to some extent, she found it inconsistent that he would agree to the facts in the stipulation and then in argument attempt to undermine his own agreement. And I think that more speaks to a lack of credibility or a lack of trust. One of the things this court considers in determining what sanction to impose is what is necessary to impress the importance of following the rules on the attorney. And as Attorney Hammes has noted, he has been before you two times before. He has a 2011 four-month suspension and then another shorter suspension in 2015. Obviously, those decisions have not made much of an impression on him.
Didn't these counts that were stipulated to occur before 2015?
They did.
Okay, so saying that the last discipline didn't have much effect on him doesn't make a lot of sense to me because the counts occurred before the discipline, not after, correct?
Correct.
Okay, just so I'm clear on the record.
Also, a serious suspension, a serious lengthy suspension, and in this case a revocation, was needed to protect the public. Attorney Hammes talks about the Ernesto Chavez case as an example of a one-year suspension, which he says is comparable to his situation. Ernesto Chavez was a serious case, but it was also a default. Essentially, in that case, the attorney knew he was going to be administratively suspended. He had decided not to pay his bar dues. He knew he was going to be moving to another state. And in that limited time frame, took on a bunch of clients, took money for those clients, didn't do the work, practiced a little bit after he was administratively suspended, and then didn't appear at the OLR hearing. I think the difference between the Ernesto Chavez case and Attorney Hammes' misconduct is the breadth, both in time and in scope. Attorney Hammes' misconduct, as has been noted, stretched over many years, up to about 2012, where he disengaged from the practice of law.
So what would he have done in between the last time he was here in court and today to demonstrate that he was not going to be a threat to the public, that he would not be practicing law, that he would not have any new violations? What could he have done to prove that he no longer is a threat?
Frankly, at the very extreme end, discontinue entirely from the practice of law.
Are there other charges that are pending now that involve the practice of law since the last time he was here in court?
I can tell you that there is no public case, no current pending public case against Attorney Hammes. Whether or not there are grievances would be confidential until a public case is filed.
Okay, fair enough. So back to my question,
yes.
Can you think of anything else that he could have done?
I mean, it's probably a boring answer, but practice in a manner to ensure trust and competency, not necessarily competency in the law, which is, you know, a specific term of art in our rules, but essentially do the job that we expect all lawyers to do, and which it appears today he admits that he has a hard time doing.
Okay, but is there anything that demonstrates that he hasn't done that between the last time he was here in court and today?
Not in the record, no.
Counsel, Attorney Hammes advances in his brief the Chavez case and argues, while acknowledging, as he did here in court, that a suspension should be is due, he advances, like Chavez, it should be a one-year suspension. Tell me why. I'm not going to ask 1 year. Let me pick something else, a different number. Why isn't a three-year suspension sufficient here? What's the difference between 3 years and revocation here? I mean, I know the legal difference, but I want you to convince me that a three-year suspension won't accomplish what you're trying to accomplish.
Thank you.
I would say, or Olar believes, that revocation is appropriate due to the severity of the misconduct. The difference between a three-year suspension and a revocation is, of course, a revocation is essentially a five-year suspension at minimum. The severity of the misconduct merits that extra 2 years. Are there cases of which this court has decided which indicate possibly a lesser sanction is appropriate? Yes. You know, each attorney discipline case that this court decides is very individual, highly dependent on the individual facts of each attorney and the misconduct. You know, based on the information that OLR had throughout this entire process, up to the point where, you know, we entered into stipulation with Attorney Hammes, we believed revocation is appropriate due to his prior history, the progressive discipline that this court has imposed as a policy. Ernesto Chavez had only a prior private reprimand. Attorney Hammes, as noted, has a substantial disciplinary history.
Well, he has a 4-month suspension and a shorter suspension, right?
Correct.
Okay, so, and now you're going to jump from 4 months to 5 years. Quite a big step, don't you think?
Yes, yes. However, again, it's sort of the severity of the misconduct, and as I believe the referee noted in her report, some similarity between the misconduct, you know, over time through, as she noted, his misrepresentations to Judge Koshnick, and then appearing again, several misrepresentations, those 8.4C violations, which appear in this matter. Now, again, I do recognize, or OLR recognizes, that the time frame is different, right, that all this misconduct ended in 2012. Mm-hmm. However, again, just sort of the pattern showing it was not an isolated incident that cropped up in one prior disciplinary matter, as well as just the totality of all of his misconduct. I mean, it touched upon essentially every aspect of an attorney's practice of law, from communication to clients, to trust account violations, to, you know, I would characterize things like his representation of Gary Teagan and Rhonda Graff as taking money and then not doing the work, the sort of thing that Ernesto Chavez did.
Is the $400 in restitution paid yet to Graff?
No. So instead of the Ernesto Chavez case, OLR did present a couple of other prior disciplinary matters, which it believes are better analogs to Attorney Hammes' misconduct. One of those is William Grogan. The other is T. Christopher Kelly. William Grogan seems to be the one that encompasses, again, that breadth of misconduct. It was 8 client matters and 33 counts. Attorney Grogan did have a substantial disciplinary history, another suspension before that. T. Christopher Kelly was in some ways a more severe case. He was a gentleman who took a bunch of clients, took their money to handle post-conviction or criminal appeals, and then just did not do the work. It was not a default in the traditional sense. He filed an answer in the case, but then declined to appear further, and the court wound up defaulting him and striking him. But Attorney Kelly had no prior discipline. So OLR's director, looking at these previous cases, believes that they provide guidance to and support for a revocation in this matter. And then in conclusion, Attorney Hammes is correct that you cannot gather the full picture of a person from a referee's report. It is tough to fully grasp someone just on paper. However, the misconduct which he admits, and frankly the pattern of expedient behavior, whether in service of himself or in service of his clients, is something that this court should not allow, and accordingly, it should uphold the referee's factual findings and adopt her recommendation.
Should we give any consideration to the fact that he didn't put OLR through a trial to make them prove each and every count to which he stipulated?
No.
Why?
That was his decision. It was his decision.
Well, of course, it was his decision, but cooperation is always the decision of the person who's cooperating, right?
I would not, I should say, our agency would not consider that cooperation in the traditional sense. I mean, OLR did have to file a motion to get discovery out of Attorney Hammes during this proceeding. The proceedings itself dragged on for several years. Simply because he chose not to have a trial and go through the questioning and the confrontation between all of his former clients is not something that merits consideration.
Well, it certainly saved OLR a lot of time and a lot of money.
That is true.
Okay.
That is true. But that's our job. You know, our job, whatever the reference.
What about framing that in terms of accepting responsibility?
Yeah. There you go.
I think that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, certainly Attorney Hammes, through pleading no contest, does not contest the charges, and to some extent, versus pleading guilty, that's an admission. However, I believe, as the referee noted, it appears that he has, to some extent, attempted to undermine that through his briefing on sanction and then a little bit through his brief to this court, essentially challenging that the nature of his wrongdoing and the facts.
Counsel, I actually do have a question about the subpoenas.
Yep.
Were they issued before or after the complaint was filed?
They were issued before.
Okay. In what stage of the proceedings were they issued at?
So they were not issued during the disciplinary proceedings. You know, essentially, you can break down the OLR process into three stages. One, there's an intake process that weeds out a number of grievances. Then there's a formal investigative process. Any grievances that come out of that that are found to have, I don't work on the investigative side, but there's a specific standard. They go before the preliminary review committee. They find cause to proceed on that matter. And then almost all the time they come to litigation where they're publicly filed. The subpoenas in this case were issued by the investigator, so before it even came to litigation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Unless there's a specific question. Oh boy. Unless there's a specific question, I would first like to address two items mentioned by Attorney Hendricks. Rhonda Groff was a assignment for a limited liability company wherein she discontinued the representation within 60 days of my not completing the work. It is not an extension of multiple years where I did not complete the work. I did not complete the work, and I owe her the restitution of $400. Second, Mr. Teagan is an individual who retained our office to try to convert the title on a non-salvageable vehicle. I did not timely complete the work. He filed an Office of Lawyer Regulation inquiry. He stopped at my office multiple times. I advised to him that I did not have time to get the work done, as at point in time I was unwinding the practice, and I returned his money. So one of the vast differences that I would project exists regarding any revocation case is that the sought-after restitution in this case is $400.
Why haven't you paid that by now?
I understood the last, in 2015, I did it upon the order of the court with the other individual. That's the process that I understood. I was ordered to do so by the court, and I paid it immediately within that time frame.
So you were waiting for an order from this court to pay the
$400? Wait, I'm not saying that I don't owe it. That's how it worked last time, as I understand it. Again, Your Honor, that's how I understood the process last time, as you ordered the amount to be paid, and then I paid it within, I think, 15 days from the date of the suspension.
The referee made this observation that Hamas seems to do what he wants without regard for the Supreme Court rule. And when caught, he asserts or implies that his violations are merely technical irregularities, a nuisance that he cannot possibly be expected to follow. At no point in his response brief did he express remorse for his transgressions or empathy for those clients who filed complaints against him. That's at page 23 of the referee's report. I'm not sure that sounds to me like you accepted accountability. And so can you respond
yes.
to that?
I would very much like to answer that, because I was going to read that as part of my closing statement.
Oh, well, glad to be of assistance.
I cannot express to you how much I disagree with Referee Goldman's assessment of me as a human. She's consistently done that to me as a human. I'm unsure how much more remorseful I can be. I discontinued the practice of law in terms of an active public practice making money assisting on a private basis. I'm unsure in terms of how I'm to express to this court. I'm expressing that the Chavez decision indicates at a minimum, I'm saying it, I should be suspended for a year. I'm unsure how much more remorseful I can be with that. In terms of the clients impacted, in listing them off, I am sorry to express that Mr. Leach, I completed his work. Ms. Davis, I completed her work. Mr. Kowalski, I completed his work. Mr. Benson, I completed his work. The trust account, I didn't take anyone's money, Your Honor. Erickson, I completed their work. On Weinrich, I completed his work. He filed his Office of Lawyer Regulation matter, and I still completed his work during the pendency of that. Ms. Groff, I did not complete her work. I recognize that I'm to return her money. Mr. Diane M., I didn't timely respond to an Office of Regulation matter. I handled approximately 10 felony matters for Diane down in Walworth County, and I completed all of her work. Mr. Teagan, I returned his money. And Mr. Anderson, which I was helping a friend, what's not reflected in the record, the helping work that I did was approved by the bankruptcy court and discharged. So what I'm saying is, am I remorseful? Your Honor, you don't think that I think every day about this? I'm in front of you for the third time, Judge. So my remorsefulness is action. But in the reason I'm standing here, instead of taking a default, like most of these people did that get a revocation, over 75% just defaulted, is because I, in my heart, Your Honor, do not believe that this egregious conduct that's projected out within this framework results in a revocation. I am to be suspended, and I deserve to be suspended. And I deserve the self-action that I took on my own discipline to make sure that I engaged in and I showed this court seriously. Mr. Hendricks views it as though I should have continued to practice law and showed how everybody I had learned. Instead, I didn't take that chance, and I just waited for this outcome to work its way through so that the assessment that I know, which is suspension, would be consistent with what I see in the case law. I didn't pick Chavez. And as you look at Chavez's decision, his conduct is multiple times worse than mine. The money he took and not showing up for court and not completing the work. And I realize he only had a public reprimand. But what I'm expressing to you, Your Honor, as remorse, is that I wasn't in front of a hearing. She can't see my face or my deflection. And I don't know how much more irreforceable I can be when I say I deserve a one-year suspension, minimum. I'm stipulating to these facts. I'm not taking up 6 days of a hearing on 8 counts. And I discontinue the practice of general practice law. That's action. That's remorsefulness. Not, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. I engaged specifically with what I best understood would eliminate the risk that you're concerned about, Judge. And I understand your concern. So I eliminated that for the last 7 years. Thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry,
thank
any other questions?
No, that's fine. Thank you. Thank you both very much. These are always difficult matters for the lawyer and for OLR. And we appreciate your briefs and your spirited argument. We're going to take a break now so that some students can leave and others can come in. And then we will come back for our second case of the morning. We are adjourned.